Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this is this is definitely reality. The Little World of Don Camillo.
Yep.
By whom? By whom? Sorry,
Giovanni,
I need to have this in front of you. Yeah.
Guareschi.
That's
and
it.
Let me just apologize right now to anybody who speaks Italian. I very obviously do not.
Yes.
So if I get it right, it's by accident.
That's funny. So yeah, so this book is in translation. The copy that I have is translated by Una Vincenzo Trowbridge.
Me too.
Okay, good. Because there are different translations of this, I understand.
Yeah, right? And when I looked at the newest translation, which is fairly recent, I saw various people complaining about it, saying it had been made politically correct or, I don't know,
what?
Things about how the words had been changed. And I was like, but part of the point of the book is that it's not politically correct.
It breaks my heart if they're actually doing that to it.
Because, and I don't know, you know. These were just reviews. I didn't stop to compare translations. I just thought, I know and love this translation, so that's why I advised you to get it.
Excellent. Yeah, so that's the one I got. I found a book on eBay, little blue book, and it looks like it was published in 1950, this copy that I have.
Right.
So it's a collection of very short stories that appeared in newspapers and such. Where did they appear originally?
In newspapers and possibly in this one newspaper that the author was editing. Let me see if I can find the name of it.
Okay.
Since, as usual, I did not do my wonderful research ahead of time. Candido, maybe, was a magazine. But I think these wound up being published all over Italy. And I have to apologize. I have a biography of the author, which was sent to me by our wonderful friend Mark in Cologne. And I read it when I got it, which was a few years ago. And I was going to read through it again and, of course, did not.
Okay.
I highly recommend it. It was very readable. And one of the things that I remember that really struck me from it is how much this author had suffered in World War II being in an internment camp. And the way he was able to get through it was with humor. That's where he really developed his sense of humor and found he could soften up enemies and friends alike. And then he took that and translated it into his stories.
Wow.
Which is obviously very, very brief look at it. Even the Wikipedia page has more than that on it. But he kind of talks about that a little in his foreword to the book also.
Sure, sure. And these stories were published... this book was published in 1950, but the story started to come out in 1945, right after the war, right after World War II.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was in German concentration camps. Well, first he was in a Polish one, because basically he didn't want to work for the Germans. And the Germans were, of course, you know, handling Italy at that point. So he was in various concentration camps. And eventually in 1945, the camp was taken over by the English. And then he was sent back to Italy after 5 months. And so that's where kind of he was trying to figure out, how do we all relate to each other again? Because you had Communist Party members, very active, and people were coming across each other who'd gotten together and worked together when they were fighting the Nazis. But now here we are in real life, and we all believe you should do things very differently from each other.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
It does. Sounds very familiar. So
well, maybe not.
I would say that the secondary main character of this is Pepone?
I say Pepone.
Okay, but... Pepone, sure. And he is the mayor of the town and communist.
Yeah.
Right. And the priest is decidedly not communist. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, party affiliation, if there was such a thing that he had. There's one story in which there is a liberal with a capital L. So it must have been, it was the name of a party, right? Called the Liberal Party. So, and the priest wasn't wasn't a member of that party either, I don't think. He didn't fully agree with that guy either. So, yeah, it was very interesting. But Pepone and Camilo butt heads quite a bit, to say the least.
They're both very forceful personalities. And each of these little stories, almost all of them, are some point of conflict between the two at some point. Not every single one, but most of them. And what comes out is, while believing in something so dissimilar, they personally are so similar. And underneath, they understand each other because of it. But each of them would rather die than acknowledge it. And so that accounts for some of the most amusing situations. And then the third person in the stories is Christ on the cross in the church.
Yeah, I don't know. And, yeah, absolutely. That is one of the most charming aspects of the whole thing. Christ on the cross. And, you know, the first time you read, in fact, what does he say in the introduction? He says, the words that I put into Christ's mouth are, you know, that's my Christ, right? How did he put that? Something like that. But
it's my conscience or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it was fantastic. I loved it. Every time Christ spoke, it was like, you know, paying extra close attention.
Because, he says, one final word of explanation before I begin my story. If there is a priest anywhere who feels offended by my treatment of Don Camilo, he is welcome to break the biggest candle available over my head. And if there is a communist who feels offended by Pepone, he is welcome to break a hammer and sickle on my back. But if there is anyone who is offended by the conversations of Christ, I can't help it. For the one who speaks in this story is not Christ, but my Christ. That is, the voice of my conscience.
Yeah, very nice. So well put.
I think he gets them very, and he gets it very true to form. I mean, when I'm reading it, this is the Christ I would want. I mean, you know, there's a sense of humor, but there's a sense of reality, and there's always this kind of bringing back to the center of Don Camilo.
So let's see, the first place that I kind of marked, I just thought, I mean, it gives such a good little flavor of it. It's just the very opening of a baptism. It says, one day Don Camillo, perched high on a ladder, was busily polishing St. Joseph's halo. Unexpectedly, a man and two women, one of whom was Pepone's wife, came into the church. Don Camillo turned to ask what they wanted. There's something here to be baptized, replied the man. There is something here to be baptized. I think it's a funny sentence, replied the man. And one of the women held up a bundle containing a baby. Whose is it? Inquired Don Camillo, coming down from his ladder. Mine, replied Pepone's wife. And your husband's? Persisted Don Camillo. Well, naturally. Who else would be the father? You, maybe? Retorted Pepone's wife indignantly. No need to be offended, observed Don Camillo on his way to the sacristy. I've been told often enough that your party approves of free love. And again, Pepone is communist, you know, so Pepone's wife, yeah. But I love it. And then later on in that same story, he says, what do you want to name this child? He asked Pepone's wife. Lenin Librero Antonio, she replied. Then go and get him baptized in Russia, said Don Camillo, and walked away. And Christ tells him, go back, go baptize that kid. Christ says that to him.
Yeah, Christ says, if something happens to that baby, this is on you. He's like, come on, you can't expect me to baptize a baby with that kind of a name. And he's like, that's not your job to pick his name. Your job is just to baptize him.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah, and Don Camillo still resists, but I like this. Don Camillo, Christ interrupted him. Are you trying to teach me the nature of baptism? Didn't I invent it? Oh, man. I mean, it's just, that just hits me so hard. You know, it's because, you know, when you resist certain things and suddenly you break through. But Christ, you know, sitting there telling you, didn't I invent it?
Yeah,
What are you telling me? Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I love it. And that's my Christ too.
Right. Well, and that's it makes me think of, there's in my favorite story, there's a part where there's going to be a procession and Don Camillo has to pick up this huge heavy crucifix and he puts it in this, you know, like a belt that's got a socket in it that the cross can fit in. But he says, oh my gosh, this cross is so heavy. And Christ goes, you're telling me that I didn't have your shoulders. This is going to be great. I'm looking forward to being out there. Yeah. Don't I know it or something.
That is really funny. That is really funny.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, how should we proceed in talking about this? Have we introduced it enough?
Oh, I think so. I mean, these stories all don't have a particular timeline. They just are incidents and in some cases just vignettes. There are a couple that might be connected. For instance, there's one when the bishop bows to the people's will and sends Don Camillo away. And so we see that incident, and then we see, because the bishop's like, they're going to be sorry. And then he sends them a very regular priest, and they're all like, oh, we can't stand this guy. He's the worst. He moved a picture. Can't be done.
Yep.
Yeah. And so they demand Don Camillo back.
But
most of them are just separate incidents, and some of them are very tied into the politics of the time. But you don't have to really understand those politics well in order to understand what's happening in the story.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's one of the things that's so appealing to read. It's very much like today, you know. It's not that there are any times that this isn't the case. You know, people always have, you know, arguments, political arguments always. You know, it just seems heightened right now. But Pepone and Camillo have very different views, and it comes up all the time.
Yeah, and I think this may come out when we're going to talk about some of our favorite stories, but one of the things that I find interesting about this book is these people's actions and the intentions that drive them, because that's what's driving the actions, often speak louder than their words. You know, yeah. It's they'll say one thing, but in their hearts and in their actions, something else is going on.
Right.
So, for instance, there's a soccer game and Don Camillo's team is playing against Pepone's team and the ref throws the game for Pepone and Don Camillo is just furious and he's complaining to Christ. And Christ is like, well, you know, you'd have more grounds to argue about if you hadn't already tried to bribe the referee. He's like, Pepone just found out what you did and went up 500 lira or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know, that ref would never have taken his bribe if you hadn't tried to bribe him first. And he thought, well, if a priest can do it, it must be okay. And Pepone's, you know, very cast down. But he was sounding super righteous before. But his actions spoke louder than his words. And that's what influenced the referee.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you see that again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very profound, very funny stories. Yeah. So should I, got one of my favorites.
What's a favorite should of yours?
The first one that I thought, that I just loved was called Nocturne with Bells.
That's a great one.
Yeah, and it does sort of hit exactly what you're talking about. It's profound and funny at the same time. So it opens with Don Camillo. He feels eyes on him. And Christ says, never mind, eyes never did anyone any harm. But it would be nice to know whether those two eyes are going about alone or accompanied by a third. For instance, one of nine caliber, says Don Camillo. Camillo, right? That is a detail not without its own importance. Nothing can defeat a good conscience, Don Camillo. I know, Lord, sighed Don Camillo once more, but the trouble is that people don't usually fire at conscience, but between the shoulders. So he sits back, a little time passes, and then suddenly he feels those eyes upon him again, and he turns around, and there's this guy pointing a gun right at him. And then, I mean, just Don Camillo, I just love it. You know, do I lift my hands? That's Don Camillo. I don't want to do you any harm, replied someone named Biondo, thrusting the revolver into his jacket pocket. I was afraid you might be scared when I came in unexpectedly and might start shouting. And then, I see, replied Don Camillo, and did it never strike you that by simply knocking at the door you could have avoided all this trouble? I like that line too.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk for a bit, and Biondo confesses to Don Camillo that he killed somebody, but it was during the war, apparently. And the Don Camillo said something about amnesty. So there must have been a chaotic period after the war or something like that, but then someone was killed and this guy had done it. So mm-hmm. civilly, he's fine. But his conscience right. is bothering him a great deal. So he's not, you know, he's not going to be going to jail for what happened. And I love this from Don Camillo. The guy says, he wants to be absolved. He says, if I must buy candles or make an offering to the church, I'll pay. But you've got to absolve me. And in any case, I'm all right legally. I agree, my son, said Don Camillo mildly. But the trouble is that no one has ever yet made an amnesty for consciences. Therefore, so far as we are concerned, we muddle along in the same old way, and in order to obtain absolution, it is necessary to be penitent and then act in a manner that is deserving of forgiveness. It is a long, drawn-out affair. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And Biondo is like, penitent? I'm only sorry I didn't bag the lot. That is a province in which I am completely incompetent. On the other hand, if your conscience tells you that you acted rightly, then you should be content. And then he says, look, we have very clear commandments that do not exclude politics. Fifth, thou shalt not kill. Seventh, thou shalt not steal. What has that got to do with it? Asked Biondo in a mystified voice. Mm-hmm. Nothing. But I had an idea that you told me that you had killed him under the cloak of politics in order to steal his money. And then on and on there. And then he basically says, Don Camillo, you must absolve me or I'm going to shoot you. Which is not something that typically happens in the confessional. But
you certainly hope not, although right. Calvary came close
That's
to
right.
that.
That's right, Calvary came close movie. To that. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And then he turns to the Lord, Don Camillo. Lord, this is a mad dog and he will fire. An absolution given in such conditions is valueless. What do I do? If you are scared, give him absolution, replied the voice of Christ.
I loved that.
Yep. Don Camillo folded his arms on his breast. No, Biondo, said Don Camillo. Yeah, so he turns to Don Camillo turns to him and says, no, Biondo, I'm not going to absolve you. Biondo set his teeth. Don Camillo, give me absolution or I fire. No. And I love that no.
Mm-hmm.
Biondo pulled the trigger and the trigger moved, but there was no explosion. And then it says here, then Don Camillo fired. And this time there was no misfiring because Don Camillo's blows always hit the mark.
Yeah.
He tagged him.
He's a very physical guy. Yes.
Every now and then he just hits him, right? He hits people.
Or kicks. Yes. Yeah.
Then he tore up the steps. This is Don Camillo. Tore up the steps of the tower and rang the bells furiously for 20 minutes. And all the countryside declared that Don Camillo had gone mad, with the exception of Christ above the altar, who shook his head, smiling. And Biondo, who, tearing across the fields like a lunatic, had reached the bank of the river and was about to throw himself into its dark waters. Then he heard the bells. Biondo turned back because he had heard a voice that he had never known. And that was the real miracle, because a pistol that misfires is an accident, but a priest who begins to ring joy bells at 11 o'clock at night is quite another matter. Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, and the voices, when he says he heard a voice, voices capitalized.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, that's funny. It was one of the funny aspects of it. Whenever Christ is speaking, if he says me, it's capital M. You know, it's just funny.
Are you trying to teach me about baptism? Yeah, capital M.
That's right. I love it. It's just too good.
Well, and listening to this, it's interesting because when we say the stories are short, Scott read you most of the story, yeah, frankly. No. I mean, which was great. Mm-hmm. But conscience is so important to this story.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that, you know, conscience is the heart of the book. That's what's making people, you know, change how they act and inspiring their actions one way or the other, especially since Don Camillo and Pepone will both, you know, bluster a lot. but their consciences move them. And in the foreword, the author says, you know, it's my Christ or my conscience.
Hmm.
And so he's giving full expression to the fact that your conscience is that little voice that's given to you to make you do things you don't want to do. And we these days tend to not pay attention to that. Or it's not that we don't pay attention to it, but we've kind of been given permission to ignore it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's sort of a, I don't know, do we call it postmodern? I don't know. I'm hearing that word a lot lately, you know, postmodern, mm-hmm. truth, alternate facts. Mm-hmm. You know, these are things that are just being tossed around. And I think it started way before now. In fact, I know it did.
Right.
But the fact that, yeah, everything's okay. We don't need to. It's like the focus is different. It's very narcissistic. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, our times. Where, you know, making sure that yourself is comfortable seems to be the most important thing. And that's what the, you know, the self-help books are all about and things. There's not a lot of focus on, you know, well, maybe you're not the most important thing in the world. You know, maybe it doesn't revolve around you.
Right. And think how medicated our society is and, I don't know. It's just that trying to bury your conscience doesn't really work. And of course, the other part of that is you have to have, Catholics would say, and I think most people, a properly formed conscience.
Hmm.
You know, you're not responsible if you're following your conscience and you just never knew the truth of something. For instance, you know, abortion is wrong or whatever. You never understood that thoroughly. You weren't educated in it. Well, then your conscience can't inform you properly. It's not been properly informed. And Catholics take conscience to be so important that I think it was Thomas Aquinas who said, basically, you know, if your conscience really, truly, and you've done all the studying, tells you that you shouldn't be Christian or you shouldn't be Catholic, then it's more important to follow your conscience than do a lot of things that you don't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the job to inform yourself and make sure you've gone back and studied all this stuff and are not just having a knee-jerk reaction, but you've got to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And in what we just read, you know, it illustrates that, you know, Don Camillo says, hey, if your conscience is clear, you should be content.
Yeah.
But then in the very next sentence, he goes for formation and says, mm-hmm. listen, there's two commandments here that are very clear, you know, and here they are.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so both aspects of what you were talking about.
Yeah, it's for such short, simple, funny stories, they're surprisingly deep.
Yeah. They've
got those nuggets of truth in them.
They're gorgeous. Really, really neat, you know, the little nuggets, like you said. It's mm-hmm. a good word.
Yeah.
Well, how about one that you loved?
My favorite is called The Procession.
The Procession, yes.
Yes. And so once a year, to bless the village, the crucifix from above the altar is carried down to the riverbank where the river's blessed. It says, so it would refrain from excesses and behave decently. And so usually the townspeople would all follow them out. But the communist sections of the town said, well, we're going to march in the procession and we're going to have all our banners. And Don Camillo says, no, you won't, because political parties don't have any business in religious processions. So, okay, see right here, very timely, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he says, I've gotten these orders. And soon, of course, Pepone shows up just furious. He's like, well, that's it. We're not letting anybody else come in. It's like, that's fine, too. And so he says, he goes away and Don Camillo is like, oh, that's fine. You know, and this was several days ahead of time and people are showing up before the mass, before they're going to do the procession. And they're terrified because Pepone's men have been showing up going, we're going to shoot anybody who does this. We'll kill you. And he's like, well, no one said it to me. I'm not worried about it. You guys, I'll go home. And he says, what are we going to do? The parishioners asked him. We're going in procession, replied Don Camillo quietly. But those ruffians are quite capable of throwing bombs, they objected. In our opinion, you ought to postpone the procession, give notice to the public authorities of the city, and have the procession as soon as there are enough police on the spot to protect the people. I see, remarked Don Camilo. And in the meantime, we might explain to the martyrs of our faith that they made a big mistake in behaving as they did, and that instead of going off to spread Christianity when it was forbidden, they should have waited quietly until they had the police to protect them.
Nice.
So they all leave. Then some old people show up, and they go, "We're coming." And he's like, "Oh, you are not. You are going straight back home. I'm not risking all your lives. Old men, old women, and children stay at home." And so then Don Camilo found the square as bare as a billiard table. "Are we going now, Don Camilo?" asked Christ from above the altar. "The river must be beautiful in this sunshine. I'll enjoy seeing it." "We're going all right," replied Don Camilo, "but I'm afraid that this time I shall be the entire procession. If you can put up with that, where there is Don Camilo, he is sufficient in himself," said Christ, smiling. And then he puts the crucifix in the belt. And I've already told you about that little exchange.
Yeah. I love it, though. It's too good.
Yeah. And so as they go, you know, a little dog joins them and he's trying to shoo the dog. "Let it alone," whispered Christ from his cross. "Then Papone won't be able to say that not even a dog walked in the procession." So he's giving him some great lines here.
I love it.
Yeah. So they go around the corner and here's like 200 people all in the way. And Don Camilo takes the cross, because Don Camilo would do this because he's very passionate. He takes the cross out of the holder and is like, holds it up in his two arms and goes, "I'm coming through and I'm going to hit everybody with the cross. I'm going to strike you out of the way." And they just melt out of the way, except for Pepone. And he puts the crucifix back and he says, "Well, I'm coming through." And he goes, "Well, I'm moving, but it's for him, not for you."
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, that's okay." And they get through with it. And when he turns around after he gets back to the church so that Christ can give a final blessing on the river, he found standing before him every inhabitant of the village, not excluding the druggist, who was an atheist, who felt that never in his life had he dreamed of a priest like Don Camilo, who could make even the Eternal Father quite tolerable.
I love it. So, oh, man.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I love the whole attitude of Christ of, "Ooh, the river must be beautiful in the sunlight. I can't wait to see it."
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you're still going to do this, right?
Right.
You know,
Well, of course we're doing it.
You know, I'm sure he was like getting ready to take off his, you know, all his stuff. But Christ is like, "Let's roll."
He's looking for a way out. He's like, "Well, it's only going to be me." "Oh, that's okay.
Let's roll." Yeah. And sometimes that is the truth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's only us.
Because he just gave that lecture to everybody else.
Yeah.
But what was he going to do?
Yep. That's fantastic. Well, I love it.
Yeah, and the fact that him going out in that procession, just even with his attitude, you know, is what swayed everyone.
Yeah.
Because whether or not they had respect for Don Camilo, which you feel a lot of them did, they certainly had respect for Christ on the cross.
That's right.
Even the communists.
Yeah. Even Pepone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's even great. So when I was poking around earlier looking for, you know, just information on Don Camilo, and on YouTube they have a movie called The Little World of Don Camilo.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And I kind of randomly, it's like an hour and 40 minutes long, but I started kind of poking around in it and I came across this incident. So it was the procession is in that movie complete. You know, and it was very well done. Very well done. So check it out. And the whole movie's on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely a
black
have
and white. I'm not sure when it was produced or anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't look any of that up, but good stuff. They did good.
Yeah. But it's I love the thing of the people going, "Well, let's wait till the police can protect us." And he's like, "Well, yeah, tell that to the martyrs."
Yeah. Tell it to the martyrs. Right.
How they did it wrong.
They probably did it wrong.
Right. Well, and it's kind of that thing of today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to cause a lot of trouble. I've been threatened. People are going to be mean to me or throw bombs at me, whatever.
Yeah.
Are you going to do what's right or not?
Right. And he is, What a priest. I just, you know, he's just so bold.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not timid.
And the great thing that makes him tolerable so that he's not a saint is that he's so outspoken and opinionated and, you know, he's a real person.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Christ sometimes backs him right up.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are times, I can't remember which story it was, where he was actually in a fist fight with Pepone. And Christ said, "Hit him now." And he hit him in the face right at the right time, knocked him out.
Right.
I don't remember which story that was, but I was just like, what? Made me laugh out loud. It was good.
Yeah. And I can't remember. It might have been the story called The Confession or Confession. Uh-huh. But there's a point where Pepone has told him something and he really wants to beat him up. And Pepone's praying at mm-hmm. the altar.
Yeah.
And he says, "Christ, you know what I need to do?" And he goes, "Nope, those hands were made for blessing." And he's like, "Ugh." So he goes away and thinks, and he comes back and he goes, "But not my feet." And he goes, "All right, but just one." He's like, gives a great kick. And Pepone's like, "I was waiting for that."
Oh, that was so good. Oh, I love it.
So, you know, those are the things where you're just like, "Yeah, all right, you're going to do something, so I'll let you do this."
Oh, there's nothing I can do. Nothing I can do.
Right.
Oh, right. Too funny.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So what about you? Did you have another one?
Oh, yeah, there are several, but one that leaps to mind is just called The Bell.
Okay.
Yeah, so
you and the bells this
time.
Yeah,
me and the bells. I like the bells. So Don Camillo is bummed because he has a bell that I believe is named Gertrude. Gertrude had been carried off by the Germans. And Don Camillo had fretted about her for nearly 3 years. So his church is short one bell. And Christ says, "Stop brooding, Don Camillo. A parish can get along very nicely, even if the church tower lacks one of its bells. Noise is not everything. God has very sharp ears and can hear perfectly well, even if he is called by a bell the size of a hazelnut." And Don Camillo says, "Well, of course he can. But men are hard of hearing, and it's to call them that the bells are needed. The masses listen to those who make the loudest noise." And I thought, wow, isn't mm-hmm. that true? Isn't that yeah. so very true?
Yeah.
You know, boy, do we live in a noisy society right now.
It's
getting worse and worse. It's just, you know, the things that are vying for our attention. I can't imagine that there's been the like in all of history. I just can't imagine it. No, I think that's something that's different now than from ever before.
Yeah, and so much of it is noise.
Right, right.
You're right. It's. I was thinking this the other day. I was listening to the initial episode of a podcast called A Plate and a Time. And, mm-hmm. and they were talking about the year 1000 and, you know, just had a little bird chirping playing behind the person talking and said, you know, it would have been so much quieter. You'd be really surprised.
You'd think.
And I suddenly thought of a time when you didn't have any electronic noises. You'd hear the noise of people nearby you working or people singing or just to themselves or as they worked. But it would have been so much quieter.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we're kind of hurting ourselves, I think, with it. But anyway, continue.
I agree with you. Yeah, but I love that line.
Mm-hmm.
So then Christ says, "Well, Don Camillo, peg away at it and you'll succeed." And he says, "But Lord, I've tried everything." And this made me laugh so hard. He mentions a few things. And he says, "And I've been very near success with the sweepstakes tickets." And then he says, "A pity. If only someone had given me the shadow of a tip, just one break, and I could have bought a dozen bells." And then Christ smiles and he says, "You must forgive my carelessness, Don Camillo. You want me in the coming year to keep my mind on the race? Are you also interested in the numbers game?" Don Camillo blushed. "You misunderstood me," he protested. "When I said someone, I wasn't referring to you. I was speaking in a general way." Christ says, "Well, I'm glad of that, Don Camillo. It is very wise when discussing such matters always to speak in a general way." I laughed out loud when I read that. Mm-hmm. That was really great. So he's talking about the money, and then Don Camillo said, I'm going to go get a candle. I'm going to go get a new big old candle. And this lady's going to give him the money. Sorry, go ahead. What?
He gets given some money, Carolina.
Right. She's going to give him the money for the candle.
Right.
And
for the bill, yeah.
Right. So then Don Camillo was taking off, and Christ says, no candle, Don Camillo, no candle. But why? Because I do not deserve it, replied Christ. I have given the Signora Carolina no help of any kind in her affairs. If I were to intervene in such matters, the winner would bless me while the loser would justifiably curse me. And I love that too. So he was, mm-hmm. Before that, what I forgot to say was he had explained where she got the money or why she gave the money. And why she gave the money, Christ is saying, well, she's assuming something that didn't happen.
Right.
And then he's saying, I can't take sides in such matters, as she is trying to state that, you know, I did. And I thought that was great too. That's super profound, right?
Yeah.
No help of any kind. If I were to intervene in such matters, the winner would bless me while the loser would justifiably curse me. Right. And that's, mm-hmm. that's so very true. You know, if you,
but also go ahead. When he goes on and he says, if you happen to find a purse of money, I have not made you find it because I did not cause your neighbor to lose it.
Right. Right.
Like, I'm not a middleman.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I just thought, yes, that's all of us who just treat God like a slot machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's, what do you call that? There's a word for that in theology where you teach that, okay, if you're good and you pray a lot and everything like that, you are going to be blessed with riches.
Oh. And I think of that, the gospel of prosperity.
That's
is
it,
what
the
it's
gospel
called,
of prosperity, you know? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I love that as well.
Yeah.
And then it very interestingly, at the very end of that little speech from Christ, he ends it, I am no middleman. And then the author says, the voice was unusually severe. And Don Camillo was filled with shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. And he said, forgive me, I'm a poor, dull, ignorant country priest, and my brain is filled with a fog and foolishness. Don't be unjust to Don Camillo, you know, and then immediately, you know, Christ is smiling again. Mm-hmm. Don Camillo always understands me, and that is clear proof that his brain is not filled with fog. Very often it is precisely the intellect that fogs the brain. Isn't that true? Isn't that true, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time I was reading an Umberto Eco book, and for some reason this quote just sticks out where the main character was at a museum watching one of those pendulums swing. The ones that are like, if you can imagine it, connected to a point that's infinitely far away. And it makes you contemplate the universe. You know, he's contemplating the universe. And then this couple comes up, one who's trained on a textbook. The person that's with him is looking up and doesn't understand the significance of it at all. And the main character is just like, you know, then they walked away. He was blunted by his textbook, he said, because he was explaining it mechanically. Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is how it works and blah, blah, blah. But he failed to see what was actually happening and how amazing it was. Right. And she didn't care about it. And, you know, so to complete it, you know, so he was annoyed with the both of them.
Yeah. And it's funny. You make me think of, remember Guys and Dolls?
Yeah.
And they're in Havana and she's reading about the cobblestones out of the guidebook. And he says, what does that guidebook say about the music you hear, about the moonlight, you know, take your head out of that book and look around you.
Right. Yeah. So it can blunt your capacity for wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that line too. Very often it is precisely the intellect that fogs the brain.
Yeah.
It is not you who have sinned. Indeed, your gratitude touches me. But the Signora Carolina is neither simple nor honest when she sets out to make money by enlisting God's help in her shady financial deals. Very, very good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on, and at the very end, you know, so he's got the money that he needs. But at the very end, You know, he says, Lord, you must forgive me even if I have dragged you into this business of the money. And the Lord says, me? And he says, yes, Lord, in order to compel the usurer to part with her cash, I had to tell her that I saw you in a dream last night and that you told me that you would rather her money went to the work of charity than for the buying of a new bell. Don Camillo, and after that, you have the courage to look me in the eye? Yes, replied Don Camillo calmly. The end justifies the means. And Christ says, Machiavelli doesn't strike me as sacred scripture. Awesome. Oh, that's good. Lord, replied Don Camillo, it may be blasphemy to say, but even he can sometimes have his uses. And then Christ says, and that is true enough. That's just awesome. That's just awesome. And then the very last paragraph I love too. That night he dreamed that the Lord appeared to him and said that he would sooner see Senora Carolina's money were used for charity than for the purchase of a bell. It is already done, murmured Don Camillo in his sleep. Fantastic. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I love about this story is right after the previous conversation about, you know, Senora Carolina is not simple or honest, and says, oh, okay, I'm going to tell her I'm not going to take the money. And Christ says, oh, no, you know what? You have a pure desire. Go ahead and take it. It's okay. And he's like, oh. But as he's going out to do it, this little kid gets in, or, you know, a few days later, a little kid gets in his way or, drawing on the wall with charcoal, and he catches him. But while he's yelling at him, he notices how skinny the kid is and ragged.
Yeah.
And he realizes that, oh, he belongs to a family where they don't have anything. And so he diverts the use of the money for a children's camp where this kid can go.
Exactly.
I mean, he's going to build it. And so the other thing I love about it, the thread is that Christ, by going, yeah, you can have this, he puts Don Camillo in the way, essentially, of what are you really going to do with the money? Does the money go for the bell or does the money go for the people? And Christ doesn't bring that up, but Don Camillo, you know, does it on his own volition.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. Yep.
Yeah.
So good. But, so very good.
Yeah. And again, it comes down to, you know, intention. Don Camillo's intentions are really pure, and he follows his conscience about that kid. And Senora Carolina is anything but pure. It's a messy world,
and he
doesn't really fix it by in these little stories. He just shows, here's how we live.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to put that. Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Yeah, well. Just, you know, it's that thing of when you're talking about something, you start thinking about it differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I would have thought of it that way.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, what other one is interesting to you? Well,
my other real favorite that I always think of is called Men and Beasts.
Men and Beasts.
And it is another one where it is Don Camillo and Pepone face to face. And what happens is there's a huge farm that has 100 cows, very modern dairy. And the farmhands go on strike, led by Pepone, you know, because they're just not paying them what they're due. And the farmer says, I am within the law. He's like, well, that's fine, but we don't have to come. Well, so what happens is that the farmer isn't going to feed his cows either. Not the best farmer in the world. He's like, well, I'm not going to do all that work by myself. So what happens is as they're striking, they can hear the cows lowing. There's one cow in particular who's getting ready to give birth, and she is very distressed, and they can all hear it. So they go for days. I mean, the second day, they haven't had any water. They haven't been milked. Of course, they're hungry. And so there's some older laborers who want to go do it anyway. And Pepone's like, no way, man, forget it. You're traitors. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, here comes Don Camillo. And he's like, Christ says, well, you've got to try and calm these people down and avoid acts of violence. And it's funny because the way we think is these 100 cows are just as important as the people.
Yeah.
And Christ is saying by violence, you know, because Don Camillo is saying it seems a pity that you're preaching reason and the cows will die. And Christ says, by violence, you may save 100 beasts and kill one man. By using persuasion, you may lose the beasts, but avoid the loss of that man. Which seems preferable, violence or persuasion? And so Don Camillo starts giving all the rationalizations for why he should be allowed to go in there and just beat up as many people as he could. And Christ is like, no, have you lost your faith? You know, this can happen anyway. So what happens is he runs into Pepone. And they both wind up sneaking in when no one can see them to feed the cat. I mean, Pepone's kind of tricked by Don Camillo. But, yeah, they wind up feeding the cows and giving them water. And the guy who's, I guess, an old farmhand is living up in the hayloft. So they let him come down so he can help the cow that's in labor. And it's funny to me the fact that they're still yelling stuff at each other while they're doing the exact opposite. Then Don Camillo opened the trapdoor again and sent a bale of hay through the opening. What do you think you're doing? Asked Pepone, who had so far remained hidden. Help me to throw down these bales and I'll tell you. Grumbling as he did so, Pepone set to work chucking down the bales, and when Don Camillo jumped down after them into the cow barn, Pepone followed him. Don Camillo carried a bale to the right-hand manger. You'd better attend to the left-hand manger, he said to Pepone. Not if you murder me, shouted Pepone, seizing a bale and carrying it to the manger. They worked like an army. Then there was the problem of watering the animals, and since they were dealing with a modern cow barn with drinking troughs placed along the outer walls, it involved turning 100 cows right around and then trying to stop them from drinking themselves to death. And I can just imagine this, these two people. Then it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so they have to wait till nighttime so they can sneak out again and no one knows they did it. And so Pepone was in a fury, but there was nothing for it but patience. When evening fell, Pepone and Don Camillo were still playing cards by the light of an oil lamp.
Oh my gosh.
So I love, for one thing, patience is, and I don't know if this was true in the translation or just how I took it, but patience is an old-fashioned name for solitaire.
Oh,
so they were playing cards. I could just imagine them playing double solitaire or something like that. You know?
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah.
Yeah. He says,
so playing cards, says, not together, but separately next to each other. That's too funny.
I'm so hungry. I could swallow a bishop whole, exclaimed Pepone savagely. Hard on the digestion, Mr. Mayor, replied Don Camillo quietly, though he himself was faint with hunger and could have devoured a cardinal. I'm sorry, man. There's no theological significance. That was just hilarious.
It is funny. Oh my gosh. really good.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how the strike is broken, essentially, because the old farmer is so terrified that the cows have all died that he settles the strike with Pepone.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so Don Camillo's going, well, you should always listen to your priest, my dear children. Which, of course, Pepone is, like, so furious.
Anyway. Oh, man. That's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. You know, the violence, that was a profound thing that you were reading about, the violence, too. Mm-hmm. Which is preferable, violence or persuasion?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Lord, you are confusing the issue. And then Christ is like, but if by reasoning you avoid one man being killed today, couldn't you also by reasoning avoid others being killed tomorrow? Don Camillo, have you lost your faith? Wow, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the instinctive thing that, I say we, but certainly me, I mean, I'm not going to run in and hit somebody, but I have words that are so harsh, they might as well be a blow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's real hard to hold those back sometime when I think I know more, somebody else is so clearly wrong. And that's the violence, that it might not kill someone, but what does it do to them?
Yeah.
Internally.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Lord, you're confusing the issue. This is not only a question of the loss of 100 cows, but of the public patrimony. And the death of those animals is a loss for every one of us, good and bad. And it could intensify existing differences. Yeah, I mean, all these arguments that he has, the Lord is like, you know, but you're the important thing is the one man, right? He's the one sheep that I go after, right?
Oh, good one. Right? Yes.
You know, because that's important stuff, you know. Fascinating.
Well, yeah, that's good. Don't take your eye off the immediate need of the moment.
Right, right. And it's confusing with all of the arguments he has about society here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, public patrimony, it's a loss for every one of us, good and bad. I mean, these are all things that are societal, right? And it can intensify existing differences, create a conflict. He's like, no, there's this one man.
Right.
We should save him.
Yeah.
And it's just like, boom, you know, done. That's what needs to be done. Why aren't we looking at the most basic thing? Stop clouding it.
Well, it makes me think, I was listening this morning to a podcast. It's called Lectio Divina with Cardinal Thomas Collins. Mm. It's very good. He's a Canadian cardinal. And he's this particular one was about Genesis and the Garden of Eden. And he was talking about the snakes, well, not the snake's temptation, but, well, kind of. But he was talking about the rationalization process of, he goes, it starts off with, I want that. I want that fruit.
Hmm.
And then it's Eve, you know, so Eve looks at it and it was lovely to look at. It was looked wonderful to eat. And there are several things and the serpent has thrown in and it will give you great wisdom. And he's like, you know, those are all the rationalizations of, well, there's a really good reason for me to do all this. And he goes, but what does it come down to? I want it.
Mm. Wow.
And he goes, that's why in confession, when you go in, you say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And you're just supposed to name baldly what you did, because anything else is making excuses. And we see that development here. And like you're saying, it's so easy to cloud the issue when it comes down to what is this thing.
Right.
That I'm doing.
Yeah.
I want it. And I have to do this violence to someone or something or to my relationship with God in order to get it.
Yeah. Clarity of thought, you know, and that went into that intellect one. Very often the intellect clouds, you know. That's what all these arguments are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't tend to think of them while you're reading them, of course, because they're just, they're funny, but they're wonderful examples. And every so often, it's really good for me to just pick these up and read them, because they really do have the basics. You know, like you're saying, it's that clarity of thought. It's what is the real point to all this stuff.
Yeah, that's so well done. And how did you come across this in the first place?
You know, it seems to me, some time ago when blogs were an important thing and Facebook wasn't, and there was more conversation on blogs and among bloggers, somebody mentioned them and then it kind of spread around. Everybody was, oh, I love these stories. And at that time, the newest translation hadn't come out yet and these had all fallen out of into the public domain. And so there was a website that had a lot of them online and I went and read them there and I was just so charmed by them. Mostly by Christ, because he's saying a lot of things that I needed to hear, you know, but they were funny and everything. And so I went and looked for a book of them.
Mm.
And that's how I came across them. And so then it was really serendipitous when Mark from Cologne sent me the story. Yeah.
So he didn't know you were a big fan of that.
I don't think so. I don't remember that being, but you know, you and I have both spoken before about Mark, and hi, Mark.
Hello, thank you so much.
He is so kind and generous, and sometimes I will just get a package in the mail, and it's some amazing thing that I would never have heard of or come across. Usually, but
and me as well. Gosh, I appreciate it. It's terrific. Everything you sent me is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's great.
But after I read that, I put Little World of Don Camillo on our list, and it's been on there for some time. And I just thought, you know, the way the world is right now, I wanted some amusing but inspirational stories. And it's not until you and I talk about this stuff that I realize how deep these stories really go and how well they relate to our own very chaotic time. Because it's that thing you said of clarity of thought. it's so easy to let all the rationalizations get in the way. And what it comes down to is letting the grand ideological stuff go in a situation as we look to, in my personal life, what decision am I called on to make right now? How does it square with my conscience and with the person I'm dealing with, you know?
Yeah, and our consciences can get so confused. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of arguments, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a cacophony. That's the way it is for me anyway. I don't know if it is. You know, I guess you let in what you let in, right? And that's one of the things, you know, that Lent is so good for.
Yes.
You know, that it's this period of time where we set aside, okay, really focus on what you can do to clear that brush away. And it's just, Lent is a blessing for me every single year. If I do it right, right? If I do make the effort where I say, you know what, I've thought about it a little bit, I've prayed a little bit, and I really feel like this is what I need to get rid of, even though I really don't want to. when you get to that point and you do it for 40 days, and what it changes, you know, and I really like at the end of it too, you're like, okay, well, maybe I don't want to put that back. You know, that sometimes happens too. Or when you put it back, you don't put it back whole. You say, what is that? What was a value in that? And if there is something, you just add that part back.
Very true.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny this year. I don't usually, you know, we've talked about this before. I think I have friends who just really look forward to Lent. And it's like, oh, Lent's coming. I can't wait. I'm always like, really? That's not, I'm fine without it.
Mm.
But the funny thing is that this year Lent begins really late. It begins March 1st.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it begins really early, like the end of January or beginning of February.
Yeah, it seems like a year or two is that way, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Easter's really late, so Lent's pretty late. And I didn't realize that I was kind of in the pattern of about this time of year, I should have been examining myself and giving something up because I found myself doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of thinking about Lent, but just it suddenly came to me that I was like, you know what? These things are just sucking the life out of me right now. And I'm going to give them up for a month. And then I thought, well, by then Lent will have started. And I was like, well, that's okay. They can go on and be my Lenten thing, or I'll do something else. But for my own good, I need to change how I relate to these things. And I don't know if I would have been so clearly able to kind of discern that. I mean, it took me 2 or 3 weeks to kind of really come to that point once I'd thought about it, which is very Lent-like also. But it's really already, it's that same thing of with Lent is, you know, the first few days, it's just a relief. Drop that weight off my back that I didn't realize was weight.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a time where they, you know, where we focus on that, you know, otherwise, you know, time just goes on. And then eventually, hopefully you get to the point where you're like, well, boy, there's something I really ought to drop. But having it in your calendar, in your year, is just a wonderful thing, you know, where it's just like, here's a time for that we set aside in which to do this very specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to go into the desert somehow.
Right? Well, yeah. And so this early kind of discernment or just this idea of I was going, well, I really need Lent to start so I could do this. And I was like, no, I can just do it.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't
wait for Lent.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
It made me for the first time kind of go, oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like waiting for the new year to start so you can do this specific thing. Well, no, there's really no reason to wait. You can start, what's today, the 14th, you know, whatever. You can start on the 15th.
Right.
Whatever it might be.
Exactly. Exactly. So, so I guess I am going to be ready for Lent. But
well, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I am still thinking. Yeah.
We've got a couple weeks.
That's the way it is. Absolutely.
This is when most people just start thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, if this is going to be a personal life change, then I don't know if those may not be my Lenten things, or they may. I have no idea. But because that's where you have to talk to Christ on the cross and go, oh.
Yeah, you've told me before that there's, you know, something that, you know, you're there and all of a sudden you get this very clear thing and you're like, oh, yeah, but oh.
Oh, really? I had thought of that, but I don't want to. Oh, I guess that's it too then. Okay, fine.
Doggone it. Yeah.
And I could just hear him going, yeah, Don Camillo, you know.
Oh, I love that. And I love it in Don Camillo how, you know, Christ can be so stern, you know, like we had read. And then the next line is Christ smiled. He nods and smiles a lot, right? He's like, yeah, that's what it is.
And in fact, there was one bit, and I had marked it, and I don't have the marker. If you can wait just a second, and I'm going to find it, hopefully.
You bet. Well, while you're doing that, I guess I could say there are more books than this.
Yeah.
It looks to me like there are 5 compiled books. The mm-hmm. Little World of Don Camillo, Don Camillo and the Prodigal Son, Don Camillo's Dilemma, Don Camillo and the Devil, and Comrade Don Camillo. And then there's some kind of an omnibus called The World of Don Camillo, which was published in 1980. So, on these translations, I'm wondering.
I think they're all just like this, probably.
Hopefully they're all good, yeah. When we were talking in the beginning, I noticed something about the Kindle edition. There's a lot of people who said something about, this translation isn't as good as I remember it, or something like that.
Okay, maybe that's what I had seen.
Yeah, there. Something like that. And then also very interesting to me, something being an audiophile like I am, here mm-hmm. on Wikipedia, it says that BBC Radio did a dramatization of The Little World of Don Camillo in 2001.
I was looking for those because Darwin Catholic, who is one of the, which is Brendan Hodge, uh-huh. who one of the people who I think I found out about this from, I mentioned on Goodreads that I was rereading this, and he said, oh, I heard the BBC did this, and I've been trying to get my hands on them.
Oh, okay.
So and it's I looked around on find. Audible.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah, and couldn't find them. So if anybody knows where, I mean, you know, I'll pay.
If I can find them, I will let you know.
Okay. But yeah. Or we'll put it in the links or something because it seems to me these are just tailor-made for good audio.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I did find the thing that we were thinking of, which you were saying, you know, Christ is so often he's, you know, you handle it and he's fine. But there was a story called Out of Bounds where Don Camillo and Pepone had gotten into it again.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been fudging things the way we all do, and Christ doesn't just say it's okay. And it says, when he had gathered sufficient courage, Don Camillo went before the main altar of the church. I didn't do it to save myself, Lord, he said. I did it simply because if it were known that I go poaching, the church would have been the chief sufferer from the scandal. How many times have we heard that?
Oh, like
with
the
sex scandals and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But Christ remained silent. Now, whenever this happened, Don Camillo acquired a fever and put himself on a diet of bread and water for days and days until Christ felt sorry for him and said enough. This time, Christ said nothing until the bread and water diet had continued for 7 days. Don Camillo was so weak that he could remain standing only by leaning against a wall, and his stomach was rumbling from hunger. The confession. Yeah. I have sinned against the law and against Christian charity, said Pepone. I know it, replied Don Camillo. What you don't know is that as soon as you were out of sight, I went back and collected both the rabbits. I have roasted one and stewed the other. Just what I supposed you would do, murmured Don Camillo. And when he passed the altar a little later, Christ smiled at him, not so much because of the prolonged fast, as because Don Camillo, when he murmured, just what I supposed you would do, had felt no desire to hit Pepone. Instead, he had felt profound shame, recalling that on that same evening, he himself had had a momentary temptation to do exactly the same thing. Poor Don Camillo, whispered Christ tenderly. And Don Camillo spread out his arms as though he wished to say that he did his best, and that if he sometimes made mistakes, it was not deliberately. I know, Don Camillo, replied the Lord. And now get along and eat your rabbit, for Pepone has left it for you, nicely cooked, in your kitchen.
Huh. Wow. Yeah, so good.
Yeah, because most of the time, Christ is just, you know, it's dealing with things and we're done. And this one, it had to go on until he had an internal conversion of not telling that lie.
Yeah.
And you know, trying to weasel out of things.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so it just really struck me of, you know, and also I just want to say while I was reading this, I suddenly thought, have you ever gone on a bread and water fast?
I have not.
You think, oh, this is no, I'm eating. This is not really a fast. Uh-huh. But let me just tell you something. We had a group of us had a friend that was very ill and also was suffering from some other problem. And we decided just as a group of friends, we were going to fast for this person for one day together. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And by the end of the day, we were all emailing each other going, who knew this was going to be so awful? But it's just like you can have tortillas, you can have sourdough, you can have, but you know, you can't have a thing on it. Uh-huh. It's water and it's bread. And it doesn't matter how nice the bread is. By the end of the day, you're just like, whoa, this is the worst ever. I hate this. And so then I'm just like the children, the Hebrews in the wilderness, right? Going, manna again, Lord? Ugh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was reading that just going, you know, that's more of a sacrifice than you know. I got to remember that during Lent.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, yeah. Well, fantastic. Thank you for picking this.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say? We're just about out of time.
No, I think that last bit kind of was out of order anyway.
That's great. No, I love it.
That was it.
That's great. Yeah, that's another one for the pool room for sure. But yeah. I love it. I am going to try to see if I can't find these radio shows too.
Because that would be great.
They would be cool. So very good stuff. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome very much.
Fantastic. All right. So what's next? Something joyous?
Oh, yeah. Well, something in West Texas. All right. That good enough?
Oh, of course.
You bet. We're going to watch a movie called Hell or High Water.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's a very small movie that's an Oscar nominee.
Oh, good.
And it's... It's got a lot to talk about, I think we'll find. Joyous is not where I would go with it.
That's cool. Is it it's up for Best Picture?
Yeah, it's up for Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay.
Oh, wow.
Best Supporting Actor, which is Jeff Bridges, and Best Editing.
Very nice.
And the thing that makes this unusual to me is that this year, you know, all the Oscars are fairly low-key movies, no huge blockbusters, but... This one is the only one that's out on DVD right now, or it was a week or two ago, because it's the only one that came out in August. And it was largely missed by everyone except critics and a few people. Huh. And the others are all fairly recent. But this one is one that they remembered all that time and came back for.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So great. I really was pleased to see that and hoping they did well, because I just thought it was terrific.
Yeah, it is a terrific movie. Can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Cool.
So,
good deal. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again very much. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yes. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. We'll see you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Mm-hmm.